Send summer out with a sizzle during the Omaha Steaks Labor Day Sale. Save 50% site-wide on legendary steaks, juicy air-chilled chicken, beefy burgers, deli-style franks, and more. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code FALLFLAVOR at omahasteaks.com today. Don't wait. Save 50% site-wide on steaks and more during the Labor Day Sale at omahasteaks.com. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code FALLFLAVOR. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Welcome to the SDR Disco Call Vidcast and Podcast, a show designed for brand new sales reps working in the world of tech sales. I'm your host, Neil Buyan, and I'm going to be taking you on a journey on the SDR Disco Call Vidcast and Podcast. Did you know that you can watch this show live with the guests on YouTube? This show is available on YouTube at happyselling.io. Hello, listeners, watchers, fans, and subscribers of the SDR Disco Call Show. Thank you for joining us. We're in 2025 and we've got a new year ahead of us and we have new guests and new chapters. If you're coming into this show wondering, what is this all about? So we live in the world of sales development. So these people are perhaps reaching out to prospects, booking meetings, and introducing tech solutions. And we also work in the world of tech sales. So think about startups, technology, phone apps, or great services to help businesses. And what I look to do in this show is find really cool and interesting people to understand what goes on in this world, what has been their career, what has been their journey, to help inspire other people to either think about coming into this, or perhaps you're already in this space and you want to get some inspiration for some cool people. My name is Neil Buyan and I'm your host. And if you're listening to this in your local podcast platform, you could do us a big favor and make sure that you give us a rating or share this with your peers or your friends or your besties. And if you're watching this on our YouTube channel, what would really help me out with the algorithm is if you can give us a like, comment, and subscribe down below. So a little bit of a backstory with this guest. A big shout out to Deepak Vadera, one of my besties from Dealfront. Deepak's been really cool where he's been pointing me in the direction of this, some awesome people. And he said, this is a person, Miss Brennan, who you need to get in touch with. She's a really cool person. I got to stay with her when I was out in Dublin. She was really cool and accommodating. So we got the chatting last year and I'm really happy to say we've brought them on board. So guest, without further ado, could you please introduce yourself by telling us, who are you? Where are you based in the world and where do you currently work?
Yes, sure. Thank you very much for the introduction, Neil. So my first name is Muireann, my surname is Brennan, and I live in Dublin in a place called Howth. So it's quite close to the sea. So I get that nice balance between city and kind of nature. So where I work at the moment is a startup called Protex AI.
Love that. Thank you very much, Muireann, and a pleasure to have you on board. To give us a bit more context with Protex AI, what's your current role and what does Protex AI do at a super high level?
Sure. So currently I am an enterprise AE in the company. And what essentially Protex AI does is we integrate with existing, you know, traditional CCTV platforms by embedding our software to help businesses and kind of industrial scale enterprises identify risk across their workplaces to try and prevent accidents from happening.
Love that. Thank you so much for filling in the gaps. And it's really cool to have an enterprise and account executive because a lot of our listeners who are SDRs may think about wanting to go into that AE life. So that's one of the reasons I think it's beautiful to have you on the show. And just also to give me a bit more context, with Protex AI, what would be the typical personas that you speak to, the job titles, and what are their kind of roles?
Yeah, so typically we would kind of factor in those that are responsible for safety across their enterprise org. So predominantly, I would target the likes of senior suite roles within operations, safety, particularly across fulfillment as well. So you might see some of our clients typically would be like likes of DHL, Amazon, Tesla, and the globe, and we kind of support them across the globe. And then you might see some other kind of pharmaceutical companies as well that we work with. So predominantly any kind of industry that has a static environment, so warehouse, manufacturing place, we'll be able to kind of tend to help them. And Protex has seen great success over the last number of years by being able to reduce workplace incidents by around 74 to 80% as well. So, but yeah, typically VPs of safety, VPs of operations, etc., are those that we'd speak to most often.
I love that. Spoken like a true enterprise account executive. Thank you so much for filling in. And to make it a bit more human, a question that I love to ask all of my guests is, outside of the worlds of sales and tech, what are your passions, hobbies, and interests? Because you've quite a few, haven't you?
I do have a few. I suppose you kind of need to keep a balance, you know, having a stressful job to make sure that kind of life is fulfilled outside. So yeah, typically a lot of the hobbies, I'm quite an outdoor person, as I said, originally, like kind of having that balance between like city life and nature. So where I grew up was quite outside, was very much a rural area, should I say. And I began horse riding at a really young age, maybe around 6 or 7. So yeah, long life passion with horses, had a horse growing up, but obviously went to university. Wasn't a very much transferable hobby to bring your horse to university. So sadly, we had gotten rid of our horse. And then about, so I had a gap for about 7 years. And then where I live now has a local riding school close by. And then I'll go down and visit friends that actually have horses and stuff. So a lot of hacking outside, a lot of like kind of necessarily being outdoors. And where I live is very much, as I kind of depicted, it's quite like a nature escape, I suppose, for those. Like a lot of tourists would come from, you know, any tourist that comes to Ireland, like a lot of Americans would come out to Hoth and go for like a cliff walk. So there's a 10 kilometer radius and that people would do a cliff the whole way around, or cliff walk the whole way around. So I love to kind of run on the cliff every maybe Saturday morning, Sunday morning with friends, get coffees. And I've recently got into kind of crazy spinning, you know, not crazy spinning, but like spinning bikes at the gym. My friend and I started going to these classes where you're kind of like dancing on the bikes and stuff. So it gets out that kind of like, it's kind of like a HIIT workout, but it really gets out those kind of like happy hormones when you're a little bit tense and stressed out for other reasons. So yeah, it's a nice little balance. But then other than that as well, so I have a few different hobbies, I suppose. I'm really into cooking. Really into, like, originally, like, you know, as younger, like baking here and there and all things like that. But actually over the last few years, I've gotten into more like savory cooking dishes, and I would try and do like a bit of recipe creation as well. And then when I was in university, I set up like a kind of a content foodie page as well. But it's not very active at the moment, but it's a passion of mine. Oh. Yes, that's a little bit.
I love that. I love that. So
whistle stop tour.
I love that. So like going from like horse saddles to like hit bike saddles. That's,
I know,
pretty cool. And like,
yeah,
running around on cliffs, like with your besties and stuff. And by all means, like if you've got the, after this episode today, like if you've got the link to the foodie blog, feel free to send. I'll be happy to like add it into the show notes. But that's really cool.
Thank you.
To get another layer inside to you there, Maureen. So what we typically like to do at this point of the show is we like to go to our guest's LinkedIn profile. And if you're new to this show, you may be asking, what's the thing with LinkedIn? So predominantly with a lot of our sales professionals and business professionals, we typically live on LinkedIn. And this is where we're going to be contacting our prospects or the people we're trying to introduce in the solution. So with Maureen's LinkedIn profile with the link, I will be putting this into the show notes so that if you want to connect with her or pick her brain on any of the topics discussed, feel free to reach out. But you've got quite a colorful career and you've got obviously different and a diverse sort of background. But we'd love to see, you've been a waitress, you've been a finalist at Tangent, you've been a pediatric nurse. You've been an account manager, founding member of Head of Sponsorships and Healthcare Partnerships. That's a mouthful. Marketing advisor. And obviously for the past 2.5 years, you've worked at Protex AI and you've kind of like built up the ranks and gone through like being the first person on the ground. We've like checked out your story on LinkedIn. It's really cool and colorful. So like take us back from the beginning of, you know, like how did you get into sales? What's this path been like and how did you get to where you are today?
Great question. Thanks very much. Appreciate the flattery on my career to date on my LinkedIn. yeah, kind of how it all started for me. When I was in, you know, in secondary school, I suppose we call it secondary school in Ireland, not high school in the UK. But when I was kind of figuring out what I wanted to do in terms of my career, I always felt like I had this compulsive need to kind of help other people in terms of, you know, maybe doing a healthcare professional role, whatever that might be, whatever that might look like, whether it be a doctor, dentist, pharmacist, nurse, I wasn't entirely sure. And I then took kind of the opportunity to kind of then study pharmacy after university. But even I would meet random people, I would meet friends, family, and let them know, this is the kind of role or this is the career path I'm taking. It was kind of a running theme, especially with people I didn't really know that well, to say to me, I think you'd be much better in, you know, a sales role, something like that, kind of client facing role. And I always thought to myself, no, I don't think that would be for me. I have to do something within healthcare. And I think, you know, I grew up in a wider family on both sides, my parents, nurses and doctors. So I think it's kind of like ingrained in you to do a healthcare profession. So anyway, I studied that for a year, and during my placement, it was in the north of Ireland in Ulster University, and while I was there, I kind of got a chance to work with some children on placement. It wasn't a very common thing within pharmacy, so I actually decided, I thought my skills would be better put to being maybe a pediatric nurse, something where I could, you know, develop my personal skills a little bit more.
So yeah, tell us a little bit more about the Maureen.
Yeah, so essentially, I then decided to make that switch from pharmacy, and I became more of, essentially, I decided to make that kind of switch from pharmacy to pediatric nursing. And the reason being is that I felt like, you know, I could add a lot more to my career by kind of spending more and building more on my interpersonal relationships. That's something that's always come naturally to me. I've been described as a very overconfident child and never afraid to kind of like do things. I was never kind of afraid to kind of hide behind the shadow of even my older sister, etc. I was always very outspoken as a child and very, I suppose, probably that extroverted part of my personality. And I felt like maybe having a job where I would be dealing with more, you know, people, regular people on a day to day, as well as having that kind of healthcare, caring, scientific background, that's kind of where I thought nursing would really, really suit me. So then I undertook a course in Trinity College Dublin. It was pediatric and adult nursing combined. So it's a 5-year course. And while I was studying there, I really, really enjoyed kind of when you're training as a nurse, it's never just linear in terms of, you know, you're interested in pediatrics. Okay, you're going to just stay in that lane and you're going to learn from the same particular people, maybe the same wards, the same locations. It's very much varied. Every few weeks, you're shipped off to maybe surgical unit, you're shipped off to maybe care of the elderly. There's constant shifts. So you're really very much thrown in the deep end in terms of constantly meeting new people, building relationships in a very, very much a very short time. So I really kind of enjoy that kind of flexibility and kind of diversity of the job. But when it came to my final year, just before my fifth year, COVID pandemic obviously landed on our doorsteps. You know, obviously it affected many people around the world in so many different ways. For myself and my team, or my classmates, not even my team, I'm thinking corporate lingo now, in my team, I'm saying it again, my colleagues. So I was actually the class rep for the pediatric end, and I was on the student council as well, within the healthcare side. So within COVID, there was obviously a lot of kind of obstacles and barriers to students being able to effectively go to placement being safe and come home safe, and obviously trying to avoid and limit the number of kind of the prevalence of affecting others at home and around with patients, etc. as well. So during that time, it was very difficult. Everybody was kind of, it was the first time that this happened. So obviously there wasn't a lot of kind of SOPs in place. Nobody assumed that the pandemic would have come as fast as it did. But ultimately that really poorly affected the student nurses in Ireland. We were not allowed to kind of gain the governmental weekly payment that others were gaining. And we weren't allowed to, we weren't given a bursary or a student allowance to allow us to be protected, to not have to work outside of our placement hours. Not sure if it's the same in the UK, but in Ireland, if you're a student nurse, you don't get paid at all. You might get some allowance for your travel, your accommodation, but that's it. And that doesn't ultimately come into effect until, you know, maybe post the 12 weeks you've done your placement, et cetera, comes as a lump sum. And that was obviously very difficult for people. And personally, my story is that I worked on a COVID ward, part of my placement, you know, learning from other nurses. Kind of, I was counted as well as not a full staff member of the nursing team, but 0.5. So 50%. I was nearly at that kind of, I was on my last leg of training. So within that course, I had to work on a COVID ward, but then obviously still had to make money some way. So I ended up going and working as a kind of a healthcare assistant, which is what I would have typically done to earn some money throughout my, you know, my training. Like many of the other, my other friends and classmates as well, it was a very common thing. But ultimately within that, I felt like I was potentially cross-contaminating. So, and I wasn't totally sure and how I really felt comfortable with it. But I got onto my university, I got on to other kind of, you know, politicians and TDs to understand, is there anything that we can do? But ultimately they kind of said, we're kind of, our hands are tied at the moment. There's no avenue to provide healthcare students with any type of financial support. So very frustrated. A few weeks later, after working on this COVID ward, while working part-time as a care assistant, I ended up, unknowns to myself, contracting COVID and going to work in this particular location. Wow. Yeah. So, and luckily I was okay, but it was more the aftermath of everything that I figured out. I could really be impacting a lot of people here. And
warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Whenever I called the call center to say, like, I have COVID, I've just tested positive, they usually typically reach out to your close contacts within maybe 5 to 6 days. To me, that wasn't quick enough. And because obviously I understand how fast the virus is going to spread and has been spreading. So anyway, I was very disgruntled, sitting in my room for 2 weeks.
And if it's all right, just to pause you there, because like this like sounded like a very tough period of your life. And I'm very curious to know, like, for somebody that was, you know, you went through these studies, you had this like passion, you know, this strong sense of self of that you want to help people, you want to go into the healthcare. And then obviously being that pediatric nurse and, you know, helping out on those wards and then having this constraint from government in terms of pay, because that affects your livelihood.
Absolutely.
Of you also helping people, and then yourself becoming a patient of COVID and then finding these, you know, like in your words, it wasn't quick enough, like the way it was going. Like, what was your view on healthcare and that sort of world with the passion that you had, but then coming into this, you know, it wasn't how it should be, perhaps, you know, you were very proactive reaching out to government organizations, etc. Like, what was going through Moira's mind at that point?
Yeah, so I think it was a lot of frustration and kind of disappointment. I, you know, going through the course, this was my 4th year into, and maybe my 5th year essentially, because I had trained or I completed a year as a pharmacy or pharmacy student. The healthcare system, obviously similar probably to the NHS in the UK, is very much kind of relying on those that are in the frontline staff, like those that are in those frontline roles. I could only, you know, one could only sit there and blame, oh, we don't have enough staff or we don't have enough this. But the reason is because the healthcare system is obviously flawed from the top down, and due to lack of resources where they're spending the money, etc. So I just knew in my heart when the pandemic came, to answer your question, I already knew I was frustrated with the industry. I already knew I felt frustrated before the pandemic came. But when it came, I just realized, like, I felt like if I don't speak up or if somebody doesn't speak up, nothing is ever going to change. And that's because it's the way it's always been. It's saying, oh, well, this is the way we do things. And I understand, you know, it's easy to say, and I think when you're a nurse or a healthcare professional, you have SOPs for every particular procedure. You have, you know, from A to B to C to D to the end of what you're meant to do in terms of a medical sense. So I think sometimes you accept that that is the norm, even if it might have been the process, not within the medical procedures itself, but the process of kind of bureaucracy of the healthcare industry, kind of to try and understand, just because we've done it like this for the last, 100, 200 years, doesn't mean that this is the modern way of thinking and the modern way of working, or the modern way of treating people. And what really actually used to grate me when I was nursing students, people come up to me and say, oh, it's a vocation. It's not a vocation, it's a job. And I think it's a job that you're interested in being passionate and helping others. You still, my friends and I would sit around and talk about this all the time. It was just kind of, it was degrading to hear people say, oh, it's a vocation, it's such a tough job and stuff, but it is still a job. And you want to be able to support people and help people. But when you're landing on a ward, whether it be a COVID ward or any other type of environment, and there's maybe two or three staff nurses to 12 patients or 13 patients or 14 patients, that's an unsafe environment. And, in any other probably outside of a work environment outside of that, a lot of people would quicker put up their hand and say, my workload is too much, I need to divvy it out, we need to hire more people for X, Y, and Z. Whereas it's not as common in the HSE, because I feel like, or the kind of way we've done healthcare to date, because it's just been accepted. So I think to answer your question, sorry, long-winded answer, but to answer your question, whenever I was in...
No, that's great. I love it. Thank you.
No problem. When I was isolating in my bedroom, I was just like, I'm so annoyed. I'm so angry. But what's the point of sitting here angry, complaining about, I had to do this and this is the situation now. Like, let's do something about it. So I made kind of an anonymous Instagram page, because at the time I was all, university was all hospitals and it was all student nurses. So it wasn't really specific to my university or my hospital. It was a kind of a widespread issue or national issue, international issue, obviously, but national to us. What was happening. And it was really, I felt like it was up to the government to do something about it. So anyway, I made an anonymous Instagram page, kind of highlighting some kind of quotes from other students saying, like, I had to work on a COVID ward and I had to go home to my ill parent or whatever it was. And just these all the kind of quotes and evidence of people, how people were treated. But it was non-specific and it didn't identify anything in particular. And I got in contact then with this nurse, a nursing student as well from another university. And she was posting similar things about getting paid or just kind of being treated better as a student nurse at that time. So I joined forces with her. We worked alongside each other. We reached out to kind of our union reps, so their nursing union reps, which were really, really helpful. And then we started to get kind of local involvement from local TDs or local politicians that would be able to kind of speak up for us in the Dáil, so kind of our House of Parliament. And speak up on the issues presented by the nation. So we got the involvement from those, and we got a more uptake, I suppose, from other student nurses as well. And it just became this kind of wider group conversation. So we'd have Teams calls Zoom calls back in those days together to try and figure out kind of a game plan. And we decided then to do kind of a viral campaign about, support the student nurses, kind of hashtag student nurses or pay the student nurses. I can't remember exactly what it was. And we'd asked everyone to do it. It really just went viral. And then a national radio station reached out to me. We were on the radio talking about the issues. And
wow.
Yeah. And I think as well, even at that time, I remember doing the interview and I felt like the journalist or radio presenter really grilled me to say, like, why would student nurses deserve more financial compensation than a business student, et cetera? And these were the kind of questions I was asked. So it just shows, I know there was kind of like trying to get some story out of it and juice out of it, I suppose, but it just shows the naivety, I suppose, of and maybe how people felt like that we were already being treated. Because obviously there's a lot of trust in that profession in general, like pharmacists, I think, and nurses are those professions that are like, that have the highest trust out of any occupation globally. So you assume that the trust is there, that we're being treated respectfully. But anyway, so after all this kind of happened, we went viral. We ended up, our union kind of corresponded with the government and those TDs spoke up for us. And we were, in the end, around 6 months later, we received €100 per week, or from €0 per week for students doing the COVID pandemic placement. And then we increased their accommodation allowance as well as their travel allowance as well. And from, I'm not sure if that's still in play today, but I do think that the accommodation and the travel allowance are still at the value that they were increased to, which was like 50 and 75% respectively, I think. And then after that, I was nominated for an award for the most inspirational student nurse of the year. That was 2021, actually, now that I think of it. Yeah, and it wasn't even a university that I went to. It was another university in Dublin. And it was kind of like a peer nominee. That's kind of how I won it, I suppose, just peer nomination. And from the efforts I kind of made to try and make that happen. So essentially, after all of that, I just really felt a bit exhausted and frustrated by the system. I know it was obviously a positive impact, etc., and I very much was an activist. I still felt very much burnt out, and I felt like I really want to do something within helping people or healthcare, essentially, but I'm just not sure being this in this role is suitable for me, because I feel like I could potentially have a larger impact if I were to kind of do it on a mass scale, as opposed to just being as a kind of day-to-day pediatric nurse, etc. So after that, I decided, wow, okay, I'm going to leave university. I graduated. I then decided, okay, I think I'm be interested in maybe taking up more of a commercial role, something that would expand skills in terms of like learning more about the commercial world, financial world, and I'm developing like entrepreneurial skills. So what I did was, because I was coming from a safety background, a healthcare background.
If it's all right.
Yeah.
If it's all right with your permission, just to pause you, because that would just blown my mind, Moira. Like, that's really freaking inspirational. Like, just to kind of like recap that. So like, you know, the world went into this state of the pandemic. You're feeling these frustrations. You then yourself become a patient. And to me, it feels like you're the sort of person where you don't really like the injustices being done, or you see things as to how they should be done, but you're very proactive on acting on it rather than just accepting that's the way the world is. You take to social media, you create awareness that then leads to, you know, like radio shows where people are grilling you. Like, you've got this real core belief as to how things should be for your fellow peers and for your fellow students. And it brings about a change within a whole country, you know, for the help of those people. Like, you really went on a freaking journey. Like, my hat's off to you. Like, I love that. And you brought about a change. But to your point, like, going through that journey took its toll on you. But like, yeah, and then winning, you know, that inspirational thing from another university to recognize you for those valiant efforts. Dude, I've never met anybody that's done something like that. So I'm like in awe. And just like, yeah, just hats. I just wanted to give you a little, your flowers to you, mate. Like, hats off to you. That's freaking amazing. But yeah, so as you said, like, this then brought about another change of questioning, where is it that you want to go? Now you're looking at a commercial side. And when I was looking at your LinkedIn, I can see, you know, an account manager for at Fionta Group. And then I can see Future Impact Summit, marketing advisor. And I can see the theme of healthcare within those. So you're still following that intrinsic thing of wanting to help people. What was that commercial journey like for you, Maura?
Yeah, so getting into things, I suppose, I didn't know. I also think that when you come from a science degree or a science background, maybe it's my own naivety. It's like, who would want to hire me in the likes of Google or those bigger companies? Because they're obviously going to take, you know, students with more preferable background, etc., with a business background, whatever that might look like. So I felt just maybe a bit naive to what I could have done. But yeah, the journey initially began when I applied for a role at Fionta Group. So didn't really know what an account manager was, didn't know what the role would entail, didn't know much about the industry in terms of where I was going into it. I didn't understand it a lot. But yeah, so it really just helped ground me for the first. It was a very, very much small, it was a small company based in Dublin. I made a lot of great friends there. I'm still friends with everybody. And we go for regular kind of drinks, regular food, regular meals together, etc. So I'm glad to have the kind of those friendships in my first ever kind of post-university role. But yeah, while I was there, I kind of understood the kind of the methods of managing clientele existing and also building out new business. It's not something I've really done before, but it was a lot around, some parts of it felt very natural to me because I'm quite a overly extroverted person. So going out to meet people for coffee, going out to try and win new business, I felt like it just it came natural to me. Probably struggled around as a nurse, never really had a lot of the structure was already put in place for me as a nurse day to day, and I knew what I had to do and it was repetitive. So maybe kind of around, and it's something I probably still struggle with now, is time management around, you know, how much time I should spend on something. I feel like I could fall into something I really enjoyed. If it's a part of my job, if it's prospecting or looking for people online, I could fall into that for hours and then maybe avoid the things maybe I don't like to do, the admin and the clear out and the CRM. I know it's a pain. It's a pain for everyone to have to kind of keep up with it, but it's obviously a very crucial part. And I've learned the hard way that, you know, if you're not following up or if you're not you're not being kind of persistent, sometimes you will obviously lose those conversations, and not saying that they won't come back around. But anyway, so there are some things I kind of struggled with in terms of time management. But, you know, I'm, you know, life's obviously school of learning. So I'm constantly learning new ways and buying new or kind of figuring out new kind of ways I can prioritize my calendar in that way to help me. But yeah, so Fiontar was great. Really learned the ropes of kind of commercial world and understand signing POs, getting clients set up, clients, retaining clients, all that type of conversation. But within 6 months of that journey there, I followed Projects AI on LinkedIn, and Dan, their CEO, Projects current CEO and co-founder, reached out to me on LinkedIn saying, hey, look, saw you followed us, really cool, love to have a chat. And I was like, I'm actually thinking of applying for your business development role. I'm not really 100% sure essentially what the role might entail. And then I just fell into the interview process then. So around five interviews later, I was lucky to get the job. So I started off as myself and my other colleague, who's now Quiva, who's now chief of staff at Protex. She took a more of an operational route, but we both started as BDRs together in the team. And our manager, Lisa Kurtz, has the best, that's what I was going to talk about, even mentorship in terms of the best training, the best we would have great workshops together. She really just got us into, she's a very passionate person about sales. So you could really kind of emulate that passion from her just by working closely alongside of her. You know, she was great for, she kind of just knew everything in the sales world, sending us, different types of podcasts to listen to. Then we would review the podcast together, sending us cold calling recordings and stuff. Because when we both started that role, we were like, cold calling, you know, that's the scariest thing in the world. Obviously. And that's what you think. It is the most terrifying thing in the world. But, you know, ultimately, especially for those that we're selling into at Protex AI, cold calling is the most successful connect rate for me as well, alongside LinkedIn, more of a casual approach. And I always think of it when I'm calling people, it's like you would ring up any restaurant looking for a booking, or any, you know, if you're booking a dentist appointment, you are looking for something from them, and ultimately they're getting the business. So I just try and take, I know that might be a silly or a funny way to think of things, but I try and take every cold call as just, hey, how are you? Look, you don't know who I am. This is what we offer. It might be relevant. I'm not really sure. Or kind of on the sense of, can you help me? I'm not really sure if you're the right person. I'm coming from a startup. I need help. I'm just starting my career. Who should I speak to? Sort of, I kind of play different types of angles with different people. And I feel like, and I think it's been commented, you know, on my review cycles and projects and from other people, that I have a very high emotional intelligence. So I think I kind of lean into that element of that skill naturally propels me and has kind of really pushed me further to the ranks of Protex, but also learning the hard skills off the back of that.
If it's all right, just to interrupt, because you've got my mind buzzing and sparking on something, and I'd love to get your opinion on this. But the tangent I would love to go with you on, Moiran, is around this where you gave that beautiful example of when you're cold calling, you put it akin to like when you're phoning up a restaurant to make a booking, or, you know, you're speaking to the dentist to book an appointment. And that's kind of the way that you perceive it. So I was on LinkedIn the other day where I saw a post talking about postgraduate students coming out of uni. And a thing which is really difficult for them at the moment is communication or having conversations. So to give examples of types of communication, like phone call conversations or face-to-face interactions, because within that generation, and again, I don't become ageist or because somebody's a certain age, I don't ever look at things like that. I'm just like, where are they in life? But they struggle with communication because they're so used to technology, where most people communicate through a text or a DM or a WhatsApp. And being, I used to be an SDR manager, I noticed a lot of people that came out of uni found it very mind-blowing that you had to get on the call to talk to people mm-hmm. or anxieties came on of going on to a Zoom with this person they'd never met. And the thing for me where I wasn't educated enough was, for me, I was just like, it's just a person. It's you're talking to me. Like, yeah. Why can't, like, this person's a stranger on the phone. Like, what's the problem? But then I had to understand that I came from a different generation where, you know, we didn't always have devices per se. We had to chat to people. We had to ring up our mates to ask, can I come round your house?
Yeah.
There wasn't WhatsApps back then. So I came from a different generation. So as a manager, as I grew like older, I had to understand that they come from a different world for me. But the way that you've just positioned it is, you know, some of my close younger friends get scared to order a Domino's pizza. They're like, why can't we just do it online? And I'm like, just buzz them, bro. Like, what's the problem?
Yeah. Just give them a call.
But I'm wondering, what's your thoughts on this mindset, of communication for young sales professionals coming in? What's your thoughts on that? Just like, it's a different generation of communication.
Interesting. I mean, I feel like it's really hard to, I think making the first, in a sense, I don't know, kind of weird, but like making the first step and realizing it's not as big as a beast as you think it is. And I do think as well, like, I was always like naturally the type of person, like, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm glued to my phone most days and I communicate with my friends over the same channels that you're mentioning, like TikTok, just sending reels, like not even having a conversation, just reels, just sending the reels. But we can all fall into kind of traps like that. But I think as well, within being an SDR, starting out as an SDR, BDR in a company, I always do think like there's a lot of noise around LinkedIn and all these social channels around like cold calling is really scary, but like the benefits reap, you know. But I think it's just numbing out that noise and saying it's not scary. It's just a phone and take one call at a time. Like, I mean, I put my hand up. There's times where I've tried to avoid cold calling myself if I'm in lulls with, you know, obviously sales, you have highs and lows, etc. And sometimes when you're in the lows, it's hard to pull yourself out of these situations. But you kind of you just need to keep a consistent routine and take each call as it comes. But yeah, I do. And I think that would be really helpful for those that are coming out of university, struggling to understand, you know, how are ways. And, you know, what I would do typically if I was looking into sales but I was kind of afraid of that that element of the job where I'd have to call people, I'd have to reach out to people and kind of hound people. It's not necessarily that. It's to try and get your mindset around, I'm actually a consultant to these people. I'm actually somebody that is a wealth of knowledge in my space, in my role. And I'm reaching out to people to just let them know who we are and what we're all about and potentially how we've been able to help other companies similar to them. So you're really just ultimately laying out the kind of foundations of that conversation. Maybe not also expect too much on your first call with somebody, to assume they're going to book a meeting with you right away or they're going to book a demo right away. It's to try and get an understanding. You might have to knock on someone's door 5 or 6 times, whether it be multi-channel effort, which I find really works well for me. So if they're not answering the phone, leave a voicemail. Even just try, you know, I think as well, when I started my career as an SDR, BDR, I would ultimately, okay, if they're not answering, I'd kind of be half delighted. Okay, you're not answering the phone. I don't have to, I'm too nervous, you know, because it is quite a nervous thing, and move on to the next. But just even practicing different types of tones of voicemails, etc., and see what works well for you. So I actually had this prospect in the US, and I had left an email or left a voicemail, and I'd sent an email straight away to say, look, left this voicemail, I explained this, hopefully this is the right number for you, got it, whatever. And he replied straight away being like, love your persistence, because I'm after, like, I was hitting him up in different areas, and he was like, let's have a meeting now, or let's have a meeting. So we booked in, so I rang him to book in some time, like about 10-15 minutes later. You know, as someone's responsive, it's obviously great to get in there as soon as you can. So I rang him, said, look, when works for you? He was like, I'm actually free for 30 minutes now. Will we do it now? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. So sent the link over. And it's just being, now obviously, sometimes you don't have the luxury of that if your calendar is busy, but it's trying to be more adaptable and flexible. And it's like, we're all just people trying to do our job. Like, what reason would they have to understand our technology? Is it a personal thing that they want to maybe be promoted in their own roles or be seen as kind of a thought leader in a space of AI and technology and, you know, advancing their industry for better work practices? Trying to understand why someone would want to talk to you, because you are a wealth of knowledge within your space, and just having a little bit more self-confidence, which, I mean, it's not something that I have every single day, but it's something I try to remind myself of. And, you know, I would try maybe set my morning routine straight in terms of, I was actually talking about this with my manager the other day about what helps me. And it's like getting out and doing exercise in the morning for me. That really helps me, whether it be a walk on the beach, whether it be, you know, if it's a rainy day, go to the gym in the morning and just try and get release those endorphins. And you're in a much more positive frame of mind. And sorry, I'm rambling on here a little bit, but even focusing on...
Yeah, you're not rambling. I'm loving this.
Your small win. So, you know, someone might have answered the phone and said, yeah, just send me an email. And, you know, you don't even have the chance to explain before they hang up. It's very like, that's a win. You know that that's their number. You know that they've responded to your call. You know, you can switch around your number for the next one, your dialing number, to try and get in touch with them. But maybe just maybe focus a little bit more personalized information towards them, and maybe more value add if it's going to be over an email, if it's going to be over a LinkedIn. And don't give up, you know, because I think, you know, everyone else, there's like the cliche or cringe thing. It's like, you know, do that last call. You just never know where it's going to lead to. Like, don't, you know, don't give up. And I always find for me, when I have one good positive kind of result, so whether that might be what I just explained there, or if somebody's like, yeah, I'll take a look, it might be another month down the line because they're traveling as a C-suite or a VP. They might be super busy in their role, but that will just, that I'll just not stop then calling, because I'll be like, I've already had a high. I know I can hit a high with others. And then there's obviously loads of different techniques. I kind of A-B test a few different systems or things to do. Is it reaching out on LinkedIn first, being like, I'm going to call you now this afternoon. If you want to talk about this, or I actually, what really works for me is genuinely speaking to people in the company, figuring out if it's just, is it something you could explore? Maybe if they're like, maybe it could apply, but just not right now. Then going out to other people and say, well, I actually spoke to this person in particular. Just kind of using all those natural techniques that you would use with friends and family. So, I mean, if you met a mutual friend on the street, you'd say, oh, well, I know you know my friend Jessica. You know, I heard that you guys do, you know, running a marathon together, etc. I'm actually wanting to get into that as well. So like, these are all natural things you would tend to do in social situations. So why would you not bring them into your workplace or into how you kind of work as a person, you know, because we're all human and people kind of like that. I feel people are more responsive to that human element. And, you know, even just like leaving a voicemail and you think that you might, oh yeah, I've messed up what I'm saying. I need to stop and re-record and delete the voicemail. I just keep it and say, oh God, my words are jumbled up today. Hope you can understand. And then I just move on. And I think, and I've had good responses from those particular incidents because it shows that like human element of me. And I think that's where people kind of know that you're not kind of that sleazy salesperson or et cetera. You're really just trying to help and to try and get an understanding if we'd be best fit. But yeah, that's kind of how I mentally cope.
I love that. And that there's so much gold within that, Moira. And thank you so much for sharing. And, you know, the key point or theme that you were saying within that was, you know, like people, they are just people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, where one thing that I've learned as a coach and as a manager is I try to get this out of my SDR's mindset of being transactional. So, you know, a lot of people say, well, I've sent emails, I've sent the voice note, I've sent the video, they haven't responded, or they've accepted the meeting, they should move forward, it should convert and stuff. These are all the transactional elements of steps. But yeah. I'm like, it's the in-between of that. It's the communication that you have, the type of conversations, the meaningful conversations. Similar to the example you gave, like if you're talking to your bestie on the street, they're not just going to say, yes, we're going to the festival. Yes, we're just going to pay the tickets here. Yes. You talk about, okay, it's going to be fun to go to the festival. And do you know how many tickets is coming? Like, oh, the cost of the tickets is free.
Yeah.
This is all the conversational pitch. So like when people say to me, oh, they haven't responded to my email. I'm like, okay, you know, they don't have to respond to your email. They might be busy.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they've ghosted me. There's this, not entitlement, but it's this expectation of, because I do this, the prospect should do that. That's, to me, transactional. And I'm like, you know, there are 100 yous trying to do the same thing to one person. Yeah. And that one person has a job, they have a life, they may have a family, they may have hobbies, they may be running on the cliffs, you know, in Dublin. Yeah. They may be doing this stuff.
So
it's like taking that insight of it's not, that it's not so much transactional. So like, you know, somebody messaged me on LinkedIn, connected with me, and I've noticed this with some SDRs where they'll connect with me and they may go into like a pitch lab, but I won't like castrate them for it because I know everybody's learning. A young gentleman put in and said, "Hi Neil, like really liking your posts and stuff like that. What are the plans for happy selling in 2025? Any projects that you're working on?" And a part of me thought was, is there going to be a pitch or is this going to lead down somewhere? But I just responded to him and I just said, "Thank you for the positive feedback. I really appreciate it. You know, I'm always trying to make a difference for people." And I said, "Brutally honest, mate, there are no big plans. There are no big projects. I'm just going to try and continue, you know, as I've done for the last 7 years. And I'm just looking forward to the day." But I didn't receive a response because I think on that expectation, he was either going to get a yes or a no. And it's not always that. Like, yeah, it's the conversation. Like, I tried to get to them to say, right, people, it's people we're talking to. So have an interest in the person, have an interest as to how they reply. And as you said, trying these little different techniques of leaving a voicemail where, you know, you may fluff up your lines, but you leave it in because that's human, that's authentic. And
exactly.
I said, that's the vibe that's coming off from your prospecting efforts. And again, I could talk for England before all about this, but I'm like, the thing is, don't expect people just to reply and accept and say yes, just because you've sent something or you've called them. Humans don't work like that, right? But the other bit that I would love to get onto with you, because it seems like you've learned a lot and you alluded to earlier coming into Protex with, you know, having this great manager that was sharing call recordings, sharing examples, podcasts and stuff like that. So a key theme that I can understand here, Moiran, is mentorship. So I'd love to know, in your words, what does mentorship mean and how did that unravel for you?
Yeah. So I suppose with a small team at the time, so Quiva and I were the first BDR hires ever at Protex AI, and our manager, Lisa, was very much, she trained she was an SDR, BDR. She worked in DocuSign, Salesforce, and kind of also, she was an account executive in Salesforce, but she had mentioned to us, it was always kind of something that she brought up, that we didn't really have, I didn't have the training in my team. So I just brought the training to the team by getting other research and, you know, reading other kind of, in particular, kind of sales icon books and, you know, leaning into other kind of techniques around Europe, around the US, and from like, you know, sales influencers, etc. So we're constantly kind of signing up for webinars and stuff with her. And so I think that was just my first piece. I feel like when we'd sit down for our one-to-ones, yeah, we'd obviously go through the numbers and we'd go through, you know, what we wanted to achieve. But she was very much like, "I'm picking up on this. Like, maybe it's not something that you realize, but I'm picking up that we could like lean into this a little bit more." I feel like, you know, she was very emotionally intelligent in the sense that she'd know when maybe you were trying to avoid something and not trying to catch you out, but trying to say, is there a reason that you feel that we can't, that you're not like, you're blocking yourself in this way? And then from that, we'd follow off and do kind of workshops on specific topics, etc. So I felt like that was kind of my first experience with having that type of mentor, because it wasn't just a manager looking at your numbers down your throat saying, you know, great, you've hit your numbers, so you're clearly okay and you don't need any, you know, training or support, etc. And it was very much like specific to myself and Quiva, because we both had individual kind of strengths and individual weaknesses, obviously. But as a team, we'd come together and kind of talk out loud and stuff like that. So that was my real first experience. And then even like my CEO, our current CEO, Dan, he I've been working with him since the day I started with Protex. We work very closely with him. Obviously, Protex AI is his baby. And, you know, he knows how to sell Protex best and how to he knows, like, he knows the North Star better than anyone else in the company. So been able to work really closely with him as a mentor, and especially as a male mentor, has been really, really beneficial to my growth in the company and learning alongside him a lot of, like, I was a BDR for just under 2 years, and I founded BDR then into enterprise. So I was very much relying on Dan in terms of how he would sell, how he would infiltrate companies, how, you know, where his, because his skill set would be quite similar to mine in the sense that we're very extroverted people. We really gel together and we're quite similar. So to be able to see how he was able to kind of enable his skills and use his skills throughout the sales process. And, you know, it's not necessarily like A to B sales process, but just being that conversational person and that person that our prospects could rely on in terms of like how we'd be able to help them achieve their safety goals, etc. He really cares. So, and I think that's something as well that everybody that is working in Protex or has spent time working in Protex really emulates, and that they really care for the cause and why they're here. It's not, I don't think, obviously, you know, you can separate your job from your hobbies and your outside life, but I do feel like you wouldn't be in a company like Protex as it's growing so fast. We've raised Series A. We're just about to announce our Series B round raised this month. So we're really growing fast, hiring fast. And I think it's a kind of a testament to the support and the mentorship that we gain throughout our career there. And even at that, so I've had a number of different managers over time, just with people moving on. Dana stepped in, and our head of marketing, Dave Rowland, as well. So I would learn maybe on the elements of that marketing side and how we can leverage those conversations to help kind of close those deals and skills maybe and a natural way of thinking that wouldn't be, I suppose, natural to me, and learning from other people. And I think it's just having a diverse set of inputs of other people's skills and trying to merge everything together. But yeah, and then just having like even another account executive I worked with while I was still a BDR, her name is Dorina. We got along and naturally like as friends, really, really lovely person. But she would always, even before I came into the role, she would say, I would let her know I was doing demo training with the CEO and my current manager, Bex, as well, who's great. And she would say, okay, you have a call with me. I'm meant to do the demo. How about you do the demo and I'll help you wherever you need. So just kind of having that extra push. And I would be so nervous. I'm like, oh, I don't know. I can demo to you. I can demo to everyone internally and I'll take the feedback, but am I ready to make the next step? And she was always just great for like, why not? You're so well able. And just kind of on the days that you might feel, you know, low or something, a prospect, it doesn't go so well. You feel like you're trying and putting your best efforts in, but it's not reaping the benefits. It's always nice to have somebody to go to and someone to really look out for you and say, look, I've gone through this journey. I have a career behind me and you remind me of me when I was younger, or I can see that you're going to hit further heights, is really, really beneficial. And also even just excluding Protex or outside of Protex, I have a really great friend who I horse ride with. Her name is Rachel and she is actually head of legal for a French bank. So she's a solicitor or a commercial lawyer. And we became friends over the last 2 years and she's very much kind of a soundboard for me in terms of, you know, where I should like put my strengths into my career. And I just feel like I have a lot of people looking out for me and a lot of people that I can go to on days that are tough. So I would give that kind of advice to anyone to try and maybe find a mentor if it's somebody that you're working with closely or if it's somebody in a role that you want to kind of uptake. And then also secondly to that, only recently actually within Protex AI, we have founded, well, not myself particularly, so Angelica Shah and Sabine Eidemar founded, they're working on, I suppose, the commercial side of Protex, but they both founded kind of a Women in Protex group. So we've paired up, you know, mentorees with mentors. So I've been paired up with Taryn Hercules. So she is our head of client success at Protex AI. So I've been working, now we only really started it in December, but I've been working really closely with her in terms of figuring out, you know, what are my like soft skills that I need to develop? Is it hard skills that I'm looking to kind of look forward to? And she's great because she's already in that kind of C-suite or leadership role within a startup, which is something kind of I would aspire to do or maybe aspire to have my own business someday. And so it's just been able to, it's great being able to kind of have these resources at access to you. And if you have them at access, you need to just take every opportunity to try and build those relationships and see where it goes. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to for I suppose 2025 and seeing how that program goes for the team.
But thank you so much for sharing that. And I think a question I'd like to follow up with the mentorship is going to be like two questions. And this is a new way of questioning that I'm learning. So just bear with me here, Moiran. Question number one is, when looking for mentorship, what's the one thing you should avoid? When looking for mentorship, what's one thing you should avoid?
I don't think you'd be getting anything out of the mentorship if you weren't looking for criticism, or not criticism, it to be too negative, but you weren't looking for honest truths, basically. So like Taryn and I, especially, we've only had one call yet, but you know, I'm sure over time, and we've only had one meetup around our mentorship group to date, but like I understand like of our next one or when we, like I'm going to be looking and pressing for, you know, what does she think on the outside of how I'm perceived to her? What are my skills? What are my strengths? I want to hear that too. But I also, what do you think I need to work on? Is there something I'm doing that maybe you feel I'd be better best put into other efforts, etc. So I'd be very much focusing on also trying to get feedback. And supposedly that was one of the reasons I was hired at Protex in the first place, is because I looked for feedback in my interviews on demand, like in the calls itself. And I'm kind of that type of person, like after every call, even with my current manager, Jacques, who has really helped me kind of onboard myself in the enterprise role, which I know it's not easy to do as you're obviously raising Series B, and he's got other, we have obviously a team of really experienced enterprise AE. So I am the first person in Protex to be transitioning in the way I am. So even just regular calls and understanding, okay, I want immediate feedback. I want bad feedback if it's two bad pieces. If it's two good pieces, I want whatever you think, because I'm not going to be able to learn. And I'm the type of person that needs to know in the moment, because I'll be able to tie that to the emotions I'm feeling for my next call. Whereas if I think I receive feedback, or if it's kind of out of context, maybe at a period of time down the line, it's not something I'd be able to really take in and work on. So I think being honest with yourself and being honest with your mentor in terms of really where you think you're lacking, or, you know, you're not saying this, you know, your deepest, darkest secrets to oust yourself out of the company or something like that. It's not about that. It's about there becoming a mentor to actually want to help you. So just really take that on board and realize that everyone is human, kind of similar to what our kind of theme of the conversation has been. Everyone is human. Everyone makes mistakes. They might also gain something from you in how you've been working and doing things. So just make sure that you understand there's a mutual benefit, but definitely try and be honest with yourself and your mentor.
I love that. Thank you so much for sharing it, and great golden nuggets. And the last follow-up question before we wrap up today on this this has been a great episode, by the way. With this mentorship, what's the one question you should ask? Like, it doesn't have to be the definitive one question, but what's one question you can ask yourself when looking for mentorship?
The one question you can ask yourself when you're looking for mentorship. I suppose if you're starting off and you want to mentor, you don't know what that means. It's like, I think you need to really focus in on being able to connect with that person. So it's like, what would I want out of a mentor? Like, okay, maybe I don't really know what a mentorship is, but I think having a relationship in the first place, or wanting to develop, if you don't have that relationship closeness, wanting to develop that relationship with that person, I think is really key, because you'll understand better their goals, their way of working, how they kind of put their hand up and when they make mistakes, how they operate through life and corporate environment, and also understanding if you gel with them as a person will really help them and yourself gain a lot more empathy for one another in terms of how you kind of operate. So I would try and look into who are the people around you at the moment. You know, you don't necessarily have to look out and reach out to, you know, there's that US group for women. Well, it's women leaders. It's called Chief, something really cool that I follow on LinkedIn. But you don't have to reach out to the founders of those particular businesses to understand, to get a great mentor. Like, you have a lot of mentors at your disposal, whether that might be a friend, a family, or a member of your family, or somebody in work that even that you're closely friends with. Maybe start with those conversations and say, you know, from working with me, or I know you might not be in my team, but just, is there things that I can improve on, etc. And then if you feel comfortable, go to your manager and say, you know, I want more of a mentorship kind of relationship with yourself, if that's something you're looking for. Or maybe put the word out, if you feel like you can't reach out to, now I know I'm in a smaller company, there's about 55 to 60 people. So I have these people at my dispense in terms of I can just reach out to them on Slack, etc. But if you are in that environment where you maybe feel like you have to kind of go through a few different kind of seniors above you, reach out to your manager, say, look, this is what I'm really looking for. And the reasons why, and I think it, you know, I think I need someone that I'd be able to kind of speak to, and I maybe want to get into their role or whatever the reason might be, or you think you might gel with them. Ask for those connections, because I think if you don't ask, you don't get, and you know, there's no harm if the person says no, fine, you move on to the next, and maybe they just don't have the time to be able to give you the best mentorship that they can. So just very much don't take it too personally, but I wouldn't hold back on asking people and figuring out what your resources are, who you have a kind of disposable, who you have disposable to have conversation with in your world now. So yeah, I would kind of focus on those things.
Definitely, like within your world and having those at your fingertips, 100% recommend. These are golden tips. I normally ask my guests, like, what would be the three tips that you would give? But I think you've just given a whole bunch of great tips there. So we really appreciate Morin. And it's been fantastic to, you know, have you on the show and learn an insight. And I know my audience have got a lot of info within here that they're going to be able to take away and action from that. So we really do appreciate you. And again, a big thank you to all of our listeners, watchers, fans, and subscribers of this chapter with the SDR Disco Call Show. As a reminder, Moiran's LinkedIn profile will be within the show notes. If you want to connect with her, pick her brain a little bit more about the topics she does, feel free to reach out. Before we do end, Moiran, are there any shout outs or kudos that you'd like to give on today's show?
Yeah. So personally, I would love to give a shout out to my boyfriend, Kian. He's been absolutely instrumental in terms of kind of just pushing me forward. We've been together for over 5 years now, and even just going for these particular job roles and saying, oh, I'm not really sure if this would be for me. But he's very much pushed me and saying, like, oh, absolutely, you can do it. He supports my goals, supports my dreams, and just ultimately really great, especially for, he doesn't work in a sales environment, he's an engineer. So just that he knows the struggle with the stress of the job, and he's very much a calming force in my life. So I definitely must give him massive kudos and big appreciation. Obviously friends and family as well, close friends, you obviously, that sends, like, I'm an accepting award, you know who you are, but especially to everyone as well at Protex AI, and like whoever, everyone that's been my manager to date. So, you know, mentors, as I said, like Rachel and Drina, and then all of my managers, all of my managers to date at Protex. There's obviously, there's a long list there, and I've mentioned most of them throughout the conversation today. So just a big shout out to everyone who's guided me and who's trained me and who's had faith in me that I could do the job as well. It's just been really beneficial. So thanks, Emil.
I love that. That's a hell of a lot of sales love there, and fully embrace all of that. So again, for our listeners and watchers, make sure that you give us a rating on your local podcast platform and subscribe. If you're watching this on YouTube, make sure that you like, comment, subscribe. Let us know your thoughts on today's chapter. Like, has this brought anything to mind? Any questions that you've got? And again, if you wanted to connect with Moiran after the show, her LinkedIn profile will be in the notes. But thank you for joining us on the SDR Disco Call Show. We'll be seeing a hell of a lot more people in 2025, and enjoy me on this journey, your host Neil Bouyan, and happy selling, and take care, Moiran, and have a great weekend, and happy selling as well.
Thanks, Neil.